prime index is at 8.5% versus 3.25% just a couple of years ago. So rates have nearly tripled in a short amount of time.
From Virginia Farm Bureau, this is Cattle Pulse, your monthly update on the Virginia feeder cattle markets, the national trends that affect them, and the stories of cattle producers from around the Commonwealth. I'm Elijah Griles, and from Appalachia to the Eastern Shore, we are happy to have you with us. Welcome to the September episode of Cattle Pulse. It's good as always to have you along for the ride. In this month's episode, we are going to be talking about the downward trend in feeder cattle prices, the upward trend in our cost of production, specifically interest rates, and then record retail beef prices that we've seen at the grocery store and supermarket. But to dive into that, let's look at our feeder cattle futures contract numbers. The September contract came in at $239.73, which is down 6.47% from a month ago. The October contract was at $236.85 a hundredweight, down 7.26%. The November contract is at $234.68 a hundredweight, down 7.87% from a month ago. To unpack these numbers a little bit, let's just talk about our cattle on feed numbers from the most recent report. As of August 1st, there were 11.1 million cattle on feed, which is almost even with year-ago levels. The cattle placed on feed was 1.7 million, which is 6% above a year ago, and marketings were at 1.86 million, which is 8% above a year ago. So we have a cattle on feed number almost even with last year, which is a little bit surprising given that we've seen these lower calf numbers moving into 2024. And our cattle placed on feed is 6% above a year ago, which is even more surprising. So when we're thinking about these feeder cattle futures contract numbers that have really taken a nosedive just since our last episode, and especially in the last few weeks, I think it's important to remember we're just seeing a lot of cattle on feed. There is a lot of supply of cattle to be slaughtered here in the U.S. There is a seasonal trend that we would see the lowest on-feed numbers in August, and that is true for this year as well. These are our lowest on-feed numbers of the year, even though we're a little bit above last year, but it's still surprisingly high. I do want to note that low feed grain prices and high cash prices have led to more cattle being placed in feedlots and a longer number of days on feed. So that is really just continuing to bolster our feeder cattle supply moving into the fall. The July Consumer Price Index was encouraging because we had an all items index only 2.9% higher than a year ago. So this is measuring month over month increases, and this is the first time that the month over month increase was below 3% since March of 2021. So although things are still getting more expensive, the rate at which they're getting more expensive has at least slowed down. I also want to note that the meat Consumer Price Index was up 3.1%, which is higher than the 2% that we saw last year. Now, here's the important numbers. The all-fresh retail beef price reached $8.15 a pound in July, which is a record. Ground beef was at $5.50 in July, also a record, and was 8% higher than last year. Sirloin steaks increased 2% to a record price of $11.73 a pound in July. And my goodness, this is what we need to keep our eye on as a potential headwind, especially as we move into 2025 and we begin to see some of this feeder cattle supply work itself out, presumably, and also reducing the amount of beef that's going to be available. Let's look at our comparative prices with pork and chicken. Pork was up to $4.92 a pound, which is up 4.6% from a year ago, and chicken was at $2.42 a pound, which is down 3.6% from last year. So although we've seen high relative levels of inflation across all of our food items for the last couple of years, the fact that we're beginning to see this divergence where beef is just charging ahead, pork is staying relatively even, and then chicken is actually decreasing year over year, this is when the consumer, looking at that grocery store aisle, starts to make some of those trade-offs. Maybe the last number that we'll throw at you here is the USDA Economic Research Service estimates that beef demand is going to fall to 56.3 pounds per capita in 2025, and that's down from 58.3 pounds per capita in 2024. Let's take a look now at our weather and climate outlook. The drought monitor showed that 6.83% of the state is in stage 2 or severe drought, and that's mostly concentrated around Augusta, Rockingham, and Highland counties. 28.51% of the state is in stage 1 moderate drought, and that's largely in northwestern Virginia, as well as in the northern part of southwest Virginia. And 23.65% of the state is in stage 0 or abnormally dry. 41% is normal, and really this improvement that we've seen from the last episode is from precipitation from Tropical Storm Debby that helped to alleviate some of the worst drought that we're seeing throughout the state. But I will note that the recent dry spell has caused our drought improvement to stall. Looking ahead to our NOAA Climate Prediction Center September outlook, we see a 40 to 50% chance of above average precipitation in southeastern Virginia and a 33 to 40% chance of above average precipitation in central and western Virginia and equal chances of above or below normal precipitation in southwestern Virginia. There is a 50 to 60% chance of above average temperatures for the entire state in September. Now, all of this is important because I'm sure we have hay production on our minds, as well as what our forage situation is going to look like in the fall for 2024. Hay production is estimated at 2.09 million tons. This is down 11% from 2.35 million tons last year. Hay acres were down 20,000 and yield was down 0.2 tons per acre from last year. Now it's time for my conversation with Chris Frazier from Farm Credit of the Virginias to talk about interest rates. We are here today with Chris Frazier from Farm Credit of the Virginias, and he is a regional sales and lending manager. Thanks so much for joining us, Chris. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here and appreciate the opportunity, and not just for myself, but for Farm Credit. Also, individually, my wife and I reside on a farm in Southwest Virginia, have a small cow-calf operation.
A lot of our listeners are cow-calf producers themselves. You're familiar with the issues that we're going to be talking about from both sides. Tell us a little bit about your area of the state and what you typically see cattle producers needing to borrow money for. Is it more on the equipment side, or is it actually purchasing animals and, you know, doing stockers or backgrounding? Just talk a little bit about Southwest Virginia and the production out there.
I think the quick answer to that is yes. We see needs for all those things. I mean, the common needs are operating expenses and capital expenditures. With that, it's a variety of things such as, you know, your stocker operations, purchasing stockers each year and making multiple turns throughout a period. We see the purchase of actual livestock with its, you know, replacement heifers, the cows. We see prepaids, crop inputs. And then outside of that, to your point, equipment, we see a lot of those requests. We see requests for real estate, for expansions. I will say with the higher interest rates, we have seen those things tighten up. I get asked often, how busy is Farm Credit? And my response over the last few months has been busier than I think we should be with high interest rates. You have seen people, to some extent, sitting on the sidelines, just with the expectations that hopefully interest rates will start to decline in the future versus where they're at today.
Where does the current rate environment fall in the context of kind of the cattle cycle in these 10-year periods?
Prime currently, the prime index is at 8.5% versus 3.25% just a couple of years ago. So rates have nearly tripled in a short amount of time. When we look at that 10-year period, the previous high that we saw was 5.25%. So we are much higher now. You can date that information back even farther. I mean, we've seen rates, you know, up to 22% in the 80s. So certainly a different environment. The thing today at this point in time is that everything is high. So animals are being sold for higher prices. We do feel like that's tightened up a little bit just recently. So while some people are sitting in reserve, we're kind of in a place right now that feed is a little bit cheaper, but interest rates are really high. You know, other inputs are high. Animals are selling for good money. It's a good thing they are, because with the high rates, really the biggest piece there is to understand your operation and your limitations. And people are still in great shape right now. That's one fortunate thing we're seeing, you know, no distressed accounts. Everyone has done well because they've had periods that they've made a lot of money to offset the high interest rates. It's not led to just being able maybe to buy that additional 100 acres or that additional piece of equipment. It's more of a retain the cash on hand to help offset if we end up in a bad situation in the upcoming months, years.
From the farm credit perspective, we're moving into September, and there's been a lot of talk kind of both in the general economy and also in the agricultural economy about what is the Federal Reserve going to do? Are they going to cut rates? Would them cutting rates in September, even if it's by a quarter, half a percent, really change kind of the farm credit perspective on interest rates? Or does it take a while for that to trickle down and actually influence what producers might see, you know, from their lenders?
There's certainly a high likelihood, it appears at this point, that we'll see hopefully a couple of quarter point decreases between now and the end of the year. There's also some articles that are leaning toward maybe two 50 basis point drops. While both would be huge, we do have to remember we have went from 3.25 to 8.5 rapidly. So how significant is 0.25% drops in relation to that? So overall, I think it is a slow process. I think one point of view is that just mentally, it helps everyone. Me as a lender, the people out in the field, producers, it just gives them a better place, maybe helps them become more optimistic and see light at the end of the tunnel, so to speak. Another thing that's very important that I want to touch base on, that we have noticed a lot of cattle producers, not just in my area, but in our entire footprint, and it's even more of a nationwide thing, utilizing risk protection on their cattle to a higher extent. It's something that's been around for years, but things such as LRP policies and hedging cattle, there's certainly been a big uptick in that as well. People learn from previous cycles and have put themselves in much better situations than the current one.
Well, that's all the time we have, but thank you so much for joining us, Chris.
Yeah, absolutely. I appreciate you guys having me.
Last but not least, it is time to look at our feeder cattle market numbers. Abingdon Tri-State for those 5-weight steers came in at $251.70 a hundredweight, down 5.74% from a month ago. Blackstone was at $282.70, up 1.95% from a month ago. Lynchburg was at $284 a hundredweight, up 1.11%, and Radiant was at $282.90 a hundredweight, down 4.63%. Shenandoah Valley was at $281.60 a hundredweight, down 5.73%, and Winchester came in at $284.70 a hundredweight, down 2.9%. That gives us a 6-market statewide average of $277.90 a hundredweight, which is down 2.69% from a month ago. Thank you so much for joining us on this episode of Cattle Pulse. That's all the time we have, but we look forward to talking to you in October.